Hello everyone, I'm Scott Colton. I'm a principal cloud advocate specializing in containers and also the container lead. I'm here to talk all about containers this afternoon, but I'm not alone. I'm here with my guests, Sarah Young and Yoshio Terada. Sarah, why don't you start by introducing yourself?
Sure. Hi, Scott. My name's Sarah Young. I'm an Azure security architect, and I'm currently in Wellington in New Zealand.
And now, how about you, Yoshio?
Hi. My name is Yoshio. So I'm a senior cloud developer advocate at Microsoft Japan, and I also so Java champion. So I'm especially developer guide, as well as I know the Kubernetes.
So today we're going to talk about some things that we're seeing either when we're out at conferences or with customers about securely deploying applications and also how to look at a production-ready Kubernetes cluster. Probably the first thing that pops to mind with people that I've spoken to is the secure supply chain and how to get applications securely from development to maybe a test cluster and then into a production cluster. Yoshio, do you want to take away your thoughts on this and on the best practices to go forward with deploying your application securely?
Yes, so exactly. So AKS has the secret is there. However, so the secret is just encoded base 64 and for more secure that application for more the secure application we created. So for example, so we need to configure the so keyboard, Azure keyboard, and so we inserted in the secure information into the so keyboard, and so it is very very useful. And also so. In order to create a secure environment, so we need to separate the we need to consider the distinguish the subsheet to subsheet. So, for example, so if we created the so like a multi-tenant subsheets, then so yeah, we can configure the like a name subsheets. However, but also so we can separate the cluster is also available. So depend on the so use case, so we need to create the so AKS cluster. Thank you.
Another thing that I'm saying, Sarah, when talking to people is your traditional security folks come mostly from a infrastructure background more. So, and a lot of policy is written around securing your network, securing your firewall, but not so much on the application side. And this is where Kubernetes kind of blurs the gray area because your configuration for not only your application, but your infrastructure is kind of passed by YAML and can be passed together. What are you seeing on the ground that people need to be thinking about when deploying their applications with things that have things like network policy or any other policy tied in with the deployment of the application?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We do get so many, because a lot of security people, myself included, come from an infrastructure background. So they're often more focused on looking at the network side of things. And when we do Kubernetes and containerization, that line blurs between what is infrastructure and what is the application. And the traditional security controls that we would use don't work in the right way. So I think it's really tricky, actually. I think we're asking people to learn a lot of new skills. And we can't just rely on network controls like firewalls and VLANs and things like that, because it's not going to work in a clustered environment and when your application is sitting on numbers of containers. So what I find is my number one tip for any infrastructure person trying to work with containerized things is to start to understand how pods work, how applications sit in pods, how Kubernetes works with the containers inside pods, and start to get your head around that. Because I think if you don't understand that, then understanding how to apply security controls can get really, really difficult. I'm not sure what you've seen there, Scott, but that tends to be a major stumbling point just because it is quite different from our traditional application stack.
Yeah, I am seeing the same thing. So a lot of the security professionals, they're looking at things like securing the API, securing the network namespaces. They're looking a lot at runtime. But things like signing your containers with crypto, making sure they're from a trusted source, all these sort of things, sometimes are not being covered as well because they're considered to be more of the application developers side of the house, and they really should be brought into scope for the overall profile of your security in your production environment. So I'm seeing similar sorts of things where the application itself's not being looked at with the security, the security policies applied to the cluster. It's kind of seen as two separate things, where I think we need to get to a place where it's all the same thing. So if you have a look at a sample secure supply chain, it would be going through your CD process. There'd be some sort of crypto there to make sure that there's a trusted model with the pod being deployed, and then it would hit your cluster. So if you have a look there, and you're talking about teams, you've probably got your application team, you've probably got your infrastructure team, and you've probably got your security team all needing to work together to get that application securely onto the cluster.
Yeah, and then we're starting to talk about, of course, shifting left in DevOps and DevSecOps. And essentially, security people need to start working with developers way, way, way more closely. And traditionally, it was kind of a throw it over the fence. That's application's problem. That's security's problem. Whereas now, all of those lines are blurred. And so we really do, particularly when we're talking about containers and DevSecOps, security and application people need to work together, and you can't use that traditional split in the same way. So like you said, I think my favorite and the one that comes up all the time is container images. So of course your container image should be signed. It should come from a reputable source. And really it should only come from wherever you're storing your container images. You shouldn't just be pulling something random from the internet. But we know that lots of people do that, and that can cause plenty of security issues. But traditionally a security person wouldn't have looked at that because they'd just be like, oh, that's the application level and the OS. We don't need to look at that so much, because why would we have anything apart from one image when, of course, you know, in this new environment, you can have so many different container images coming from so many different places, and you don't know if someone's put a crypto miner in there.
So as a developer point of view, so the push is very, very useful. So because for developers, so we only focus on developing like coding to creating the microservices. And yes, exactly, I know the detail of the Kubernetes. However, so it is very, very difficult for all of the developer to understand the Kubernetes detail of the Kubernetes services. So it means that so in order to create the secure environment, so the Azure policy, like a security policy, is configured outside of the code is very, very useful. Exactly. So not only that, so IT ops, but also developer, very, very useful services, I think. And because, so as you know, so AKS, the release time of the AKS is very, very fast, like every 3 months or every 4 months, the new functionality will be added to the Kubernetes. Then, so, maybe so it is very, very difficult to understand all of the functionality of the AKS by developer. So it means that if we can apply the policy outside of the code. And if the developer configures some illegal code, then so some warning or alert or error message coming to developer is very, very useful, I think.
Yeah, I believe so as well. This is what we're going to start to delve in now. With the latest release of AKS, we've got the beta of Open Policy Agent in Azure Policy, which allows you to do a great amount of things like extend RBAC, set up your trusted build tags and a whole heap of stuff. But before we jump into that, one of the other things I wanted to bring up was not everything needs to be new to the security folks. In Azure, we can actually use Azure AD and Managed Service Identities inside pods. So a lot of people out there know AD, love AD, and have used it for a long time. There's really good, great integration with Kubernetes on Azure and AKS. Sarah, have you seen many customers use that out in the wild?
They're starting to, yes. I mean, Azure AD, of course, we have service principles. They've been around a long time. But now we have managed identities, which are like a wrapper around service principles, much nicer to use, like them a lot. And AKS has just started supporting them. So I've definitely had quite a lot of conversations with customers about it. And everyone's starting to get used to the idea that we can get away from service principles and use something much more efficient. But as it's only very, very new, I think there's going to be a lot of people who have been waiting for it and will get on board. But yeah, I don't know about yourself or Yoshio, if you've seen any customers jump on in earnest, but I've had a lot of conversations about it. So I expect lots of people to take it on very soon.
Yeah. I'll just jump back there and explain for folks that are new to managed service identities. A managed service identity is an AD user or a group that is allowed to talk to other services inside Azure, and it gets injected into the pod, so the application code doesn't need to know anything about it. There's a couple of services that are run inside your Kubernetes cluster that will do the validation for you, and that allows you to talk to other services. For example, if you had something that needed to talk to Cosmos DB, you could inject an identity into the pod that allows it to talk to Cosmos DB, and then you're allowed to you give granted access, but you can also revoke it if you need it, if something happens to that pod. And as I said, there's a couple of services that run inside your cluster that does all the validation for you to make sure there's no rogue pod there saying, hey, I am your front end pod trying to speak to Cosmos, but it actually is not that particular pod. Just to backtrack a little bit for folks that didn't understand or haven't heard of managed service identity before, because as you said, Sarah, it is quite new.
It is. And it is, like you said, Scott, it's the way of getting rid of hard-coded creds, because we know hard-coded creds in application code or in config files or whatever it is, they've been around for a long time. And that, as someone who did a little bit of red teaming a few years ago, that was the thing we always used to look for, was if we could find hard-coded creds anywhere. And unfortunately, you would find them more often than you would expect to as well. And I guess, you know, some things like managed identities is a way of getting rid of that, because, you know, if someone's got a username and a password, it's game over.
That's correct. Now, let's circle back to what Yoshio already spoke about a little bit, and that is policy on AKS. And I think this is a really big one, and this comes from all the great work done in the open source world from the folks at an OPA, or Open Policy Agent, and Gatekeeper for Kubernetes. And what it actually allows you to do is it allows you to do a lot of work around applying policy, as you mentioned before, outside of your code.
So can I share my screen? Is it okay? Excuse me, can I share my screen?
Go for it. See what happens.
So actually, so we can configure that like a policy. So it is very, very easy to configure the policy for AKS. So for example, so policy and select the definition and so for example, so we can select the so Kubernetes. I'm so sorry. So this is wrote by Japanese, and this is a list of the all of the policy, and we configure the we would like to configure the policy, it is very very easy to configure the policy, and I'm thinking that so this is very very useful and very very easy to configure. I'm thinking so it is very very useful. Please try everyone to configure the so Azure policy.
Yeah, and policy is there's a lot of inbuilt policies as well, right? So so you don't have to, if you don't know where to start, there is a start for you. We have like predefined policies that are based on good practices and best practices. So yeah. I'd say you think, I don't know how to configure policies. I don't know what policies to configure. Then we give you a ton out of the box. So that's a good base. And then as you get more familiar with AKS and Kubernetes security, you can add your own that are specific to your environment. But we're not asking you to go out into the wild by yourself and try and configure policy.
Yeah.
And if you want to find the docs on those policies, it is docs.microsoft.com, and then just look for AKS and then policy samples. And there's a whole heap of a wealth of information in there. And as I said, it's a great place to get started if you're new and want to have a look at what policies are available for you.
Yeah. And maybe so for already you mentioned, so this is based on the open source based technology. So maybe so just now, so all of the policy was predefined as a policy. However, so since now maybe so we can configure, we can create the custom policy by ourselves I hope.
Yeah, there is also the flexibility to create the custom policy if there's something in your environment that's different. But you can take one of the policies, the example policies that are already written if you're new, and take that as a learning step. Take what's already there and then practice with that to learn how to extend it to what you need in your environment. So we've got a couple of questions that's come through, which I'll just quickly have a look at. One is about design structure for a stateful-based application that needs to connect to something central, like an RMDBS. So stateful sets and containers is always a tricky one. I mean, it's come a long way than it has in the beginning. But inside Kubernetes, there's some things you need to be aware about. For example, if you deploy a stateful set with the deployment and then you roll back the deployment, what's written to that disk won't be rolled back because there's no way for Kubernetes to understand the zeros and ones written on that disk. So if you've updated something, although the deployment's rolled back and your pod's rolled back, what's written to that disk hasn't. So have you seen anything out there, Sarah, around deploying stateful applications and best practices?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I was going to say, Yoshio, you pulled a face. I want to know what your face was about when they asked that question.
Okay. So exactly, I don't like the so stateful set. So I always for me, so Kubernetes is microservices infrastructure, I'm thinking. So at that point, so stateless application is very, very important. And so in order to create some microservices, we will consider at first to avoid to use the stateful set. I'm thinking.
And that's not bad advice. Like where possible, if you're looking at something like a DB or some other service that needs stateful sets, I would recommend using another Azure service if possible, then have your stateless application set talk to that other service like Cosmos DB or anything else rather than running on the cluster itself. But as I said, stateful sets can be done on top of Kubernetes. Just be wary that there is no rollback rollback functionality for what's actually written to the disk.
Yeah, I think I can only reiterate what everyone else has said, that Kubernetes is cool. It's very trendy. And I know that lots of people are wanting to put their applications on Kubernetes and containerize it. But if you have an older application that is not ready and it's not been modernized and it's got like large bits in it that are stateful, please don't put something on Kubernetes just for the sake of it. There are lots of other Azure services out there that could possibly run it better for the time being, and you can look at refactoring it in the future. And as Scott said, you could just have it talk to parts of a Kubernetes cluster. Like, don't possibly shoot yourself in the foot for the sake of it. There's a ton of other things out there in Azure that can host your application well as well. That's the only thing I'd want to add.
Now we'll move on to something that's close to my heart and that I love, and this is networking. So we'll go do something we said before that it's not as straightforward on Kubernetes as it would be like when you're doing networking on Azure. But in AKS, we do have a networking plugin for policy, which is the Calico Network Policy. And what that allows you to do, for people who don't know, Kubernetes by default, when you just deploy it, has a flat networking hierarchy. So you just have your IP address namespace and pods can all talk to each other. That's probably not ideal for a production-ready environment. So I spoke a little bit about this at Ignite the Tour, but we do have Calico Network Policy, which is allowing you to create basically VLANs within and blocking pods from talking to each other. How important do you think that is when you're looking at a production environment, Sarah, to make sure that you've got the right policy around your networking there?
Yeah, it's really important. So, I think it is something that people forget is that, network security has been around a long time and people always think about firewalls and VLANs and that's great. But then people forget that when you spin up a Kubernetes cluster, you need to separate out the pods and even the containers and actually separate out the parts of the cluster. So obviously network policy is a way we can do that. And it's important because if we take it back to the same security principles that have been around a long time, we're looking at always reducing risk and reducing blast radius. So, if you have all your pods isolated, all your different pods within a cluster, if someone breaches a single pod, then as long as you've done that network isolation properly, hopefully they shouldn't be able to move laterally to another pod. But if you just had all you had a flat cluster, then of course it would make, if someone breached a container or a pod or any of the controllers, it makes that lateral movement much more easy. And we're always about in security lowering risk and making things more difficult for attackers, because you can never entirely eliminate the risk. And it's interesting that everyone generally remembers this at the network level, but of course now you can actually do that within a Kubernetes cluster itself. And I do think, it's really important to do it. And it's great that we have the ability to do that in AKS, because certainly the minimum you want to really stop a breach happening at all, if possible. But if you can't do that, you definitely want to limit the distance that they can travel within your environment.
So for me, so And so every time I'm explaining about the customer, so in order to create the AKS environment, please create the simple structure. So at the time, so depend on the so services, the requirement of the services, the network policy is very, very useful. So for example, so in one big AKS cluster, and so the customer need to create the so many multi-tenant services and by using the isolated by the namespaces, then the network policies will be very, very useful for restrict the access or port. However, so in the opposite side, not only the network policy, but also in order to create more simple structure of the AKS. So sometimes I'm saying to customer about the, so please create the different AKS cluster. So if the number of microservices is so huge, or a lot of microservices there, so I say to customer, please separate the cluster is more easily to manage the isolated service to services.
Yeah, that's a great point, Yoshio. Depending on your blast radius and your security risk and what you've done, your analysis on the risk is, it could be possible to create another AKS cluster. And then there's plenty of good services you can use to route traffic in between the two clusters. Yeah, that all comes down to what your security footprint is. We've just got another question come through, and this is probably one we'll close up with. Is someone's asked, is it mandatory to use 443 on a cluster IP service? So I'm going to start with answering that depends on your security risk. Like, you could use port 80. Depends if you want to have everything with SSL at transit. Depends if you're using a mesh or anything else like that. Sarah, have you your thoughts on this question?
And I see what you did there. You left this one to the end, so I can't go on a massive rant, but... use 443 if you can, please. Like, it should be relatively little overhead to use 443 nowadays. Don't send things in the clear. Now, I'm sure there are some specific circumstances out there that don't allow that, but generally, always default, be secure by default. Just because you have an option for secure and insecure, or sort of clear and, I should say, encrypted and in the clear, you know, even if it's just transiting within, you know, your cloud, my advice would always be go for the secure version, unless you can't because of some kind of overhead or maybe legacy application that can't support it. Or if you have another reason that you can't do it, and they do exist in real life, like, we have to be realistic. But as Scott was saying, if that's the case, then it comes back to a couple of catch-all phrases in security, which are, it depends what your security posture is and your risk tolerance. And that's when, you know, as a business or an organization, you have to say, am I willing to accept the risk of this communication channel not being encrypted? To get the business benefits from this application. And businesses make those kind of calls all the time, so that's not unusual, but definitely generally, if you can, use 443, please.
And just to say, there's also a whole heap of cool open source projects out there or that do security and, sorry, certificate management inside Kubernetes that allow you to do this pretty seamlessly, so. Yeah, there's plenty of things out there. Well, that looks like that's all the time we have. So first of all, thank you, Sarah. It's been very insightful, all the conversations we've had. And also, thank you, Yoshio. Again, very insightful, and thank you for your input into the conversation. Enjoy the rest of your build, but now we've got to throw over from containers to